And especially when you consider that Coach Sean McCaffrey, who formerly of Armstrong, now of Georgia Southern, and has done so many great things since he's gotten here, interrupted by COVID-19 like we all have been. But the fact that you can take that kind of pedigree and mesh it into what Georgia Southern is trying to build at the Division I level, it is going to reach a point where Georgia Southern is one of the premier tennis destinations in the Southeast. I'm confident of that, just considering what Coach has already done in this area anyway. He knows what he's doing.
They'll be making their way to the Mid-State to take on Mercer on Sunday, 1 p.m. the first serve. Georgia Southern women's golf finished second in the Strutter Gus Invitational, just one stroke behind the Seminole State squad. Alberte Thiessen finished tied for second. Four Eagles finished in the top 20 for Emily Kufeld and company.
Had a chance to talk with her during one of the COVID interviews last summer. She was actually in Denmark, in her homeland, the time that we had done that, and we talked a little bit about how her home country was one of the best in terms of limiting the spread of COVID-19, and granted, that was 8-9 months ago, and I don't know if we thought that we'd still be at this point by the time that nearly a year rolled around, but they were actually able to open up and get to their version of normal a lot more quickly than some of the other nations have, and she was actually stuck over there for a while. They couldn't allow her back over the United States border, but now that she is back, she's one of the premier players on that roster, and she's showing that form.
Georgia Southern Rifle wrapped up the regular season against number 18 UAB, and it's the first time I think we've gotten into this as far as what a tie looks like in Rifle. They tied UAB and then had to go to a tiebreaker. UAB won the tiebreaker with 220 center shots opposed to Georgia Southern's 217. So UAB gets technically the victory.
Okay.
But it was a tie. It's almost like in hockey when you go to a shootout. Yes, the other team gets the win, but you still get a point.
Okay. See, I'm pictured if somebody just walks to the other end of the room and puts an apple on their head and just tries to be brave. I don't think they would.
I don't think that's how that works.
I don't think they would go that way.
I don't think that's how that works.
Yeah, William Tell has not made its way to the Shooting Sports Center.
Thankfully. They look ahead to Lexington, Virginia at the SoCon Rifle Championships March 6th through the 7th, hosted by VMI. Georgia Southern Swim and Dive took 6th at the CCSA Championships. Anna Marie Hoyniak finished 2nd in the 200-yard breaststroke. Time was deemed a NCAA B-cut time. But then the postseason awards for the CCSA coming out, Colin Vest named the Diving Coach of the Year, and Anna Marie Hoyniak named the Freshman Swimmer of the Year. Georgia Southern Women's Tennis Wednesday fell to number 7 Georgia 6-1. Then on Saturday, they got it going 7-0 the sweep against Florida A&M out at the Wallace Tennis Center. And then on Sunday, two matches against ABAC and swept them both 7-0. Wednesday, they'll be at Mercer at 2:30. And then Friday in Savannah at Savannah State, a 1 p.m. first serve, and then return home on Sunday against the College of Charleston at 1 p.m. Track and field right now at the Indoor Conference Championships in Birmingham for the Sun Belt Conference. Finished up day one yesterday, going into day number two, I think, as of right now. In the first day, finished 10th out of the 12 teams in Sun Belt Conference. And so you can watch that on ESPN Plus. It's odd to have a Sun Belt Championship that Dan McDonald is not calling on E+, but that's where we sit.
Hearing that a Sun Belt Championship is happening, we saw it with volleyball a couple of months back, but to know the championships are happening makes me feel, could make both of us feel pretty good, that basketball could happen down in Pensacola. You're gonna have a split site on campus at Hartzell Arena at Pensacola State College, and then the Pensacola Bay Arena. Don't know exactly which destination either of our teams are going to be playing at. That still needs to be figured out over the next 4 or 5 days. It's a busy final week. We had 3 games in basketball last night. Women still need to finish up their schedule. The women could finish as high as third. The men could finish as high as third. And then when you get into winning percentages, games may or may not get played because of COVID, because of weather. We are nowhere near close to being able to figure out what it's going to look like. But at least by the time we get to Sunday night, maybe early Monday morning, it'll be a clearer picture.
We'll dive into what that picture kind of looks like, although, as you mentioned, still muddy. but Georgia Southern softball at the UF Bubbly Invitational started off the season falling 8-3 to the number 6 team in the country in Florida on Friday. Saturday got swept by Charlotte 5-4 in 8 innings, and then Florida took them down 2-1 on Saturday as well in the afternoon affair.
That was a tough one, that second game. Georgia Southern was up in the 8th inning, and then Florida gets a walk-off 2-run single to claim the victory. That's a tough loss.
Then on Sunday, Georgia Southern, a run rule victory over Charlotte, 13-5 in 6 innings. And then Georgia Southern, a run rule in effect against number 6 Florida, 11-0 the final on Sunday. They look ahead as they will head down to Jacksonville, take on North Florida in 5 games. It'll be one on Friday, a 4 p.m. first pitch, doubleheader starting at noon on Saturday, then a doubleheader starting at 2:30 on Sunday.
As we think about minor league baseball a little bit, well, a couple of years in the South Atlantic League when I was doing Charleston River Dogs, we'd have 5-game series whether you were at home or on the road. But now this year with the realignment of minor league baseball, they're going with 6-game series. You get Monday off every week, which when I was doing minor league baseball, that would have been awesome instead of having to do. There was a stretch in 2009. I had 29 straight days with a game.
Good.
I don't know how many games I did, but it was 29 straight days with a game. That was my first year doing full-time. But now the minor league system is being entirely controlled by Major League Baseball. The new schedule, it's been reduced to 120 and 140 games. Every Monday is off, and you play 6 games per week against the same team, whether you're at your home or at their home.
And you look at some of the schedules. I know looking at a Triple-A schedule, there are times where you play the same team 40, 45 times in a year.
Yeah. We thought it was bad when we'd play the Greenville Drive 22 times a year, and now you're doubling that. But you've got to limit travel. You've got to limit exposure. We're still in the phase where we don't exactly know what COVID can do. But I'm still thinking that as vaccinations increase, as our understanding increases, and hopefully personal responsibility is going to at least increase, if not stay close to where it is, then by the time we get to next football season, maybe it will look something close to what it did towards the end of what 2019 was. I can't say that for sure, but with the way things are going, I think it's trending that way. I'm not a CDC expert. Don't call me Fauci. Don't call me anything like that. It's just what it seems like.
You throw better than him.
I haven't thrown in a long time.
I still have confidence.
I appreciate you.
Georgia Southern men's basketball had their schedule all kinds of thrown into a blender last week.
Yeah.
Because of the COVID protocol, we talked about it a little bit last week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but supposed to be playing on Friday and Saturday last week in Conway. It got moved to a single game Sunday afternoon. Georgia Southern ended up falling 65-55, 4 Eagles in double figures, but you and I were talking about it a little bit. Almost felt like the week off kind of came back to bite Georgia Southern.
It was a very, very messy game in the first half, and it almost felt like a pickup game, where hardly any fouls, hardly any free throws. It was just up, down, up, down, up, down, missed shot, turnover, bad passes. Coastal hadn't been on the court in 15 days, but they were practicing. They were not nixed by COVID. They were trying to play Appalachian State, but the Mountaineers, they missed 3 weeks because of their own COVID issues. They actually play tonight against Georgia State, and that's going to help us figure out where the East standings could end up. But for the Eagles, had that loss on Thursday against the Panthers. The positive test came out on Friday, so it's an automatic 7-day quarantine slash isolation Tuesday morning.
We're both tied at one.
Tuesday morning tongue. There you go. You have to clear 3 negative tests program-wide, which they did. Got back on court Friday afternoon. Coach Berg talked about that a little bit on Inside Georgia Southern Basketball last night, about simply trying to get some wind back, trying to get into a little bit of rhythm, especially on offense. Had 2 workouts on Saturday. The team went Saturday morning, took the trip up to Coastal, which is still the easiest trip in the East. I know we go to Atlanta, but for me, Coastal is the easiest trip just because the view is a whole lot better. Had a chance to get a workout in on Saturday night up at the HTC Center. And it's not as if the Eagles were playing great in the first half, but defensively they were doing enough to hold Coastal to 26%. They were 2 of 17 from 3, led by as many as 11, led by 5 at the half. But what's happened so many times this year, whether it's COVID-related or not, the second half just has not gone the way that Georgia Southern wants, especially on defense. Couldn't get the stops. Coastal still wasn't hitting threes, but they were starting to get out and run a little bit more. They owned the glass. And it just felt like Georgia Southern ran out of gas.
Now, the big pressing question I've been waiting to ask you.
We did not go to Dario. Could not convince Bill to stop the bus to go to Dario. That was not in the cards.
Okay, well, that was going to be the second one.
Okay.
But how is your penalty box to call the game from?
How do you think it was?
Because we had seen pictures from Barry McKnight and a couple of different people that you have plexiglass and you're kind of confined at Coastal, the way their new setup is. You only have like half a table,
yeah,
if that.
Right.
And they've got plexiglass beside you, in front of you, beside you. So it's almost like you're taking a test.
Yeah, I told Jeff McCarriger and Nate Ross, two guys I've known for a long time.
I didn't know McCarriger was up there.
Still doing that. Still doing the Coastal Carolina games. He didn't have a chance to do much football because Chanticleer football was getting picked up by national outlets. Much the case for all the Sun Belt this year with COVID losing games on ESPN and what have you. But I felt worse for him and Nate because they were in the middle of all of it, so they were surrounded on all sides by plexiglass, like they were in a penalty box for the entire game. And then you had Chris Bergen, the voice of Coastal Basketball, who was at the other end. He had some open air, kind of like I did, near our bench. I was a lot closer to our bench in this setting. It was similar to what we have at Hanner with the high-rise and being bench side, but I was closer to our bench than I am at home. And you just wonder, if you're saying certain things, not that you're saying anything bad, but what exactly are they hearing? Because there were 140 people there on Sunday afternoon, so stuff has a tendency to carry a little bit more, or it bounces right back off the plastic and right back at you. Either way.
Did you go in the last week of regular season play for the Sun Belt Conference? Again, a lot of games going on this week, a couple of games last night, some tonight as well. But when you look at the standings, Georgia Southern right now sits in fifth in the Eastern Division. Talked about it earlier, can get up as high as third depending on what shakes out this week and this weekend. But with two against Appalachian State, what's kind of the scenarios looking like for Georgia Southern men's?
Tonight, since App plays Georgia State, we will know whether the three seed is still available after that game. App is there. They're over COVID. They played two games against South Alabama last weekend, so they're fine. App needs to beat Georgia State to keep the Eagles alive for a number three seed. Now, that sounds weird, even though Georgia State's played quite a few number of games than everybody else in the East. But App needs to beat Georgia State to keep the Eagles alive for the number three seed. If Georgia State wins that game, the best the Eagles can do is fourth. In fact, it would be the Eagles and App competing for fourth place with those two games this weekend, if it goes that way. But if App pulls it off as part of their three games in 5 days all in Georgia, then the Eagles would need to sweep them, and then Georgia State would have to lose both games in Mobile against South Alabama, which they've won eight straight, so maybe that's a possibility. So the Panthers would have to go 0-3, Eagles would have to go 3-0 to leapfrog them and get the number three. Otherwise, 4-5 is probably the spot that is most likely. Not that the Eagles can't take these games, but you've got to take a Georgia State team losing all three, which I don't know how likely that is, but we'll find out, and it begins tonight.
The biggest thing that you kind of take from that is, yes, you would like to get up as high as the third. You can argue that you want to be as high as you would possibly be. But at the end of the day, now that Georgia Southern is out of the conversation for 1-2, you're out of the conversation for the first round bye. So you're still playing the same day. Yes. It's just a matter of who you're playing at this point.
And where you're playing. You're either going to be at Hartzell Arena on campus at Pensacola State or the very nice Pensacola Bay Center. You just have to know where your destination is. Everybody's going to be in Pensacola. All 12 men's teams, all 12 women's teams, COVID permitting, are planning to make that trip to the extreme western portion of the Florida Panhandle. Look, I knew it was on the handle. This is practically in Alabama, because I've never been to Pensacola. It is that far to the west.
Yeah, I've seen signs for Pensacola whenever we're down in Mobile, yeah, but never been.
So that's what we're looking forward to. You're going to be there. It's just a matter of, okay, we're at the hotel. Do we need to turn left or do we need to turn right?
For Georgia Southern, women's basketball had their schedule kind of thrown into a blender as well. Is supposed to play three games last week against Coastal Carolina. It was supposed to start on Tuesday, but because of COVID concerns in Conway, all three of those were wiped out. So Georgia Southern had an opportunity that they thought they were going to be going a full week, almost 2 weeks between games. But head coach Anita Howard gets on the phone and gets a couple of games with NC Central. Played Saturday, won 84-60, won Sunday 73-65, having to come back in that Sunday game. But there's somebody that we've got to talk about, or I'm going to hear about it whenever I get to Boone.
Oh, boy.
Sarah Moore, with her first career double-double, had 13 points, 15 rebounds in Sunday's matchup with NC Central. And the reason I say that I'm going to hear about it is because I get a call when we're in the ninth inning of the baseball game over at JI from Chad Jackson, our sports information. I'm like, uh-oh, this can't be good. Well, I call him back after we get off air, and he's like, oh, no, it's just Sarah trying to rib you a little bit, because I've always told her whenever she gets a double-double, she's doing post-game radio. Well, she does her first career double-double, and I wasn't there to do post-game radio with her. So I promise you I'm going to hear about that this weekend.
You awful, awful person. How dare you?
I know. But Georgia Southern will take on Appalachian State this weekend in men's basketball action. It'll be here inside Hanner Fieldhouse. What you looking forward to from the Mountaineers?
Having a home game is nice. Haven't had a home game in about a month. What ended up happening with the Georgia State game getting canceled because of COVID, Georgia Southern's played its last four games on the road. And they haven't done that in conference play since January of 2016, when the schedule was all kinds of different anyway. That was our first year doing games together. It's hard to believe looking back, even though it's only 5 years, it seems a lot farther. Haven't seen App since the second week of January. They won both of those games in Boone, but they had to rally from 16 down in the first game and then 11 down in the second game. They've beaten the Eagles the last four meetings, all coming back from double-digit deficits. So putting that all together into a little ball, these games have been ones that these guys have looked forward to, because they know they let two slip up in Boone. And you take those two back, maybe Georgia Southern's thinking about a bye instead of trying to get to a number three. But that's how the season shakes out. That's how the story ended up getting written. App at one point was 6-2 and in first place. But remember, they went to Troy. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Troy swept them at Trojan Arena. So App was 6-4, and then App got hit with its COVID issues. Didn't play for 20 days.
Wow.
They couldn't get on the court for 2 weeks. So think about what Georgia Southern just went through. App had to do it back-to-back weeks.
Wow.
They lose games against Georgia State. They're going to make up that one tonight in Atlanta. They got their games against Coastal canceled. Two teams that would have been fighting for a bye, but the schedule, the way it has worked out, App can't get a bye. So now they play three games in 5 days to end the regular season, all in Georgia. Justin Forrest is still one of the most talented scorers in the league. A little bit different this year because he is not necessarily the primary guy. The last few years he had been taking roughly 15 shots per game, but they've revamped the offense a little bit where guys like Adrian Delph and Donovan Gregory have really stepped forward. The two of them hurt Georgia Southern in that second game. Gregory had 19, a career high up in Boone, and Delph had 17. Delph's one of the more athletically gifted guys in this league. His shot has continued to get better. His defense continues to get better. And then somebody that's given the Eagles problems for a couple of years now is James Lewis Jr., the Chattanooga transfer. Bigger body, in great shape. He's put on 20 pounds since last year. He had 5-1s by himself.
Wow.
In those two games. So when he would either get the ball down low or he would grab an offensive rebound, he was finishing. And he's a pretty good free throw shooter as well. He's up above 70% for a guy that's 6'9", 230. So they find ways to add points.
And this is something we talked about it the first time of everybody always talks about Appalachian State now being this disciplined team, doesn't foul, yada, yada. But Coach Berg was pretty adamant last night on Inside Georgia Southern Basketball, you've got to demand the foul.
Yeah, and that's a phrase they've used all year long. It means a little bit more with Appalachian State. They committed 13 fouls in two games.
Okay.
In two games.
Okay.
Two games. So you look at, can you throw a shoulder into someone's chest and force a call to be made, whether it's on you or on them? Eagles have got to get to the free throw line more. They've been outscored at the line more than 2-1 the last two games, nearly by a 2-1 margin in conference play. They're also getting really hurt on the glass, and that's an area with their physicality and their disciplined nature on defense. That's where App has done pretty well. So if the Eagles can correct those areas, they could find themselves competing for as high as a 4 seed. They just need confidence. They need steadiness. They need consistency, and they need to find it quickly, because next weekend is when we do it for real and when we pick the winner of this conference to go to March Madness in Indiana.
For Georgia Southern women's basketball, they'll be making the trip up to the mountain to take on Appalachian State. 6 o'clock the tip-off on Friday, 4 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday from the Holmes Convocation Center. Kind of a similar situation for Georgia Southern women's basketball right now, sitting in 5th place at 5-7, App State in 3rd at 8-8. Georgia Southern has the opportunity, depending on how this week shakes out across the conference, to overtake Appalachian State for that 3rd spot, but that's the highest that they can get. And it all starts and stops still with Appalachian State, with Pree Stanley, one of the most athletic guards in this conference. She's shifty, she is quick, and she does everything to disrupt you on the defensive side and then can convert it in points on the offensive side. Somebody that's been a little bit off this year for App State is Lainey Gosnell. She's somebody that can score at all three levels, like you hear a lot in men's basketball. She can score down low, but she can also shoot it from long range. The shooting from behind the arc hasn't necessarily translated this year, shooting just about 24% from behind the arc this year, but is somebody that definitely still has that threat and showed it in game number 2 of the series down here in Statesboro when she hit 4 threes. And it's one that Georgia Southern won by 30 on Friday night here in Hanner,
which had to be nice against App.
Yeah, it was.
Had to be real nice.
It wasn't bad. And then App State turns around and beats Georgia Southern pretty good on Saturday. And so it's a matter of which team is going to show up for both sides. For Georgia Southern, is it the one that won by 30? For App State, is the one that lost by 30? It's just a matter of who shows up up in Boone.
We don't have doubleheaders anymore, so I'm not seeing very much women's basketball outside of a practice here and there when the men are getting set to take the floor. I will never count out a team that's coached by Angel Elderkin.
No.
Even though you only see them a couple of times a year, she's built up enough of a reputation. Her teams always defend. They always seem to find a way. She's always recruited at least one player that you think, okay, that player can carry a team. And I think about Maddie Story right away. Mm-hmm. I know she's not there anymore, but I think about how much she meant to that part of their program. This is the time of the year where coaching really steps in, especially at this level, from sheer experience. And I think that even though it's a rivalry, coaching is going to win you games.
Yeah. Georgia Southern will look to do it 6 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock on Saturday up in Boone, North Carolina. Hopefully it's not snowing, but you can only try so
much. You said that like you were serious. But it is almost March now, so yeah, you might luck out.
So it might be over 20.
Just don't go to bed and then wake up the next day and find 6 inches on the ground. That's what we had when we were up there in the second week of January.
We'll have to have Harrison Battle snow me out.
He actually got snowed in not too long ago.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor guy. But you talk about experience, and somebody that has a lot of it is our old buddy Roger Inman, as he talks more about his umpire days on this week's edition of Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, more than enough times on Eagle Tales, we've talked about your tales as a former umpire, but how did you get involved and want to be an umpire in the first place?
My intent was to try to make it to the major leagues. I went to Joe Brinkman's in 83, and I was in the top 13. Hell, I was 13. But they only took a handful that year, and I was not one of them. And then came back, went to Southern Collegiate Umpires Camp the following year. From late 79-80 up until 92-93, I was one of the primary umpires on Georgia Southern's field. 83, I went to Southern Collegiate Umpires Camp, which was headed by Tony Thompson, and ran into an umpire in the major leagues, Eddie Vargo. And Eddie, who was retired at this point in time, watched me, and he looked at me and said, if you can tell me before next week is over that you want to work minor league umpire, I'll have you a job. I came back and looked at what I was doing here, looked at football, and said, you know, I got it made here. I don't want to leave. So I called Eddie and told him no, which could have been a mistake, but I don't think it was. But early 90s, we started using Southern Collegiate umpires for our umpires here at Georgia Southern, and gave me the largest single one-day pay increase I've ever thought about, from going from $35 to $40 a game to $100 and a quarter a game overnight. and then started working a lot more baseball at that point in time. We're working, you know, in my early years, I worked some great baseball, Miami, Florida State, Florida, you know, here at Georgia Southern, Coast Island brought in some great, great teams. You know, you'd bring in, and me and Roddy's talked about this, you'd bring in three additional teams during a school week, and you would play 7 o'clock every night, and then you'd play three games prior to that on your field. Yeah. Bring in you know, a good number of umpires, and they just live here during the week and umpire. And you play four games a day on the field, and you finish the nightcap every night. And it worked out very, very well. The Northern team's got a great chance to play, and we got a lot of wins. You know, you've been out already for 30 days, and you bring these guys in here, and they're just getting out of the snow and the ice, and, boy, they're out here, you know, getting sunburns, and we're kicking their butts.
Doesn't get a whole lot better than when Roger starts talking about umpiring.
I wonder what it would be like with him doing it now. Because we bring up umpires on the broadcast sometimes, not always for the best reasons.
Yeah.
I just wonder how much different it would be if he was the one that was behind the plate or on the bases saying swing, no swing, and having to deal with head coaches. And he's mentioned his stories about Coach Stallings, Coach Chalport, the late Chalport of the Citadel, June Raines at South Carolina, Bill Wilhelm at Clemson. And when he talks about the way that college scheduling worked before, going back and looking at old game-by-games in the media guide, there was a lot of time where college baseball was being played on Monday, and that was scheduled. Now it's, if you have a makeup game, you might be able to play on a Monday.
Yeah.
But those are few and far between, maybe not so much this year with COVID-19. But you're mostly a Tuesday/Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, and then you're getting Monday, you're getting Thursday. That's most of the time how it works. But a lot of the scheduling, because you could play as many games you wanted to back then, there was no 56-game limit, so you had teams playing 80, 90 games. You're playing a lot of Mondays. You're playing every day at some point. That's just how different of a time it was in terms of college baseball.
You look back for the weekend for Georgia Southern baseball, took on the Tennessee Volunteers to open up the season, and I know it didn't go the way that Georgia Southern wanted, but just to have baseball back in Statesboro, one, it was good for us to hear the pop of the mitt, the crack of the bat, but yeah, just like that.
Just like that. Exactly like that.
But being on the field on Friday, you could tell how much it meant to these guys and this staff to be able to get back on the field and just have baseball.
And once Jordan Jackson threw the first pitch, it was baseball.
Yeah.
Nobody was worried about COVID. Nobody was necessarily thinking, am I too close to you? Is my mask on? Just trying to enjoy the game that we all associate as being America's national pastime.
It was a 5-3 victory for Tennessee on Friday night on opening night.
They're a good team. Tennessee was good. They're a good team.
Came in number 19 in the country. The coaches poll in USA Today had them at number 16. But when you look at what Tennessee brought to the table, yes, you knew the dominant offense that was supposed to be coming into J.I. Clemens, but for the most part, Georgia Southern pitching pretty well held them at bay. You look at what they did last year, scoring 10 runs or more, I think 13 of the 17 games. Georgia Southern holding to 5 the first two games, and it took 12 innings on Sunday. That's a win for, not a win for Georgia Southern, but that's something that you can really take positively from this series, and especially for Georgia Southern. Didn't necessarily get off to the greatest start on Friday night, and Coach Hennon talked about it a lot post-game and then pre-game on Saturday, but you're going against Chad Dallas, who goes 6 1/3 of two-run baseball, striking out 7. But the big story on the pitching staff side was Tyler Owens. A
little bit.
After a little bit of a rocky start by Jordan Jackson, T.O. comes in 4 2/3, 1 run, 10 strikeouts for a new career high.
Able to confirm that was the first time a Georgia Southern reliever since at least 2004 had struck out double digits. It doesn't happen.
And you think about some of the relievers that had come through Georgia Southern in that time. You look at a Cole Whitney, a Chase Cohen at times. There's a lot of people that have come through that you would think, he might have done it, or this guy may have done it, but at least since 2004, nobody has.
The one that I thought of right away was Landon Hughes.
Yeah.
2016 tournament against UT Arlington, the game that Chase Cohen started against Joel Kuhnel, That game was cut down in the second inning because of a huge rainstorm in San Marcos. That's when Chris Draper and I were still calling games, and they suspended that game. We came back at 9 o'clock the next morning, which was different because if that game would have gone off normal, then the winner of that game would have gotten the next day off to prepare for whatever you had to do on Saturday. Had to come back at 9 a.m. the next day. Cohen did not come back. Hughes came in, and I remember Coach telling us it was his ball until it wasn't. He went out and threw 7 no-hit innings, struck out 9.
So close.
And Georgia Southern ended up shutting out Arlington 5-0. And I couldn't remember if it was 9 or 10 strikeouts, but seeing it and then having to go back and see if anybody reliever-wise had gone double digits. So Tyler Owens, despite a loss, he set some history. And it was almost the cockiness that he pitched with, and that's not something we associate with T.O. He and Stephen Curry, I remember saying this exactly on the broadcast, they're so calm, they're so steady, it's the same thing day in, day out, regardless of what the stat line or the box score looks like. He was throwing his fastball wherever he wanted to. I don't remember a whole lot of off speeds, just here and there, because you have to, but he was punching the corners, he was punching the play with that fastball. Tennessee couldn't figure him out.
No, and you don't see a whole lot of Tyler Owens blowing people away with his fastball. No. It's a good one, don't get me wrong, but we always talk about a lot of when he's got his fastball and changeup working in unison.
That's it.
That's when he's the best, and you can ask College of Charleston about that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But whenever he's got the fastball and changeup, but he didn't really need the changeup all that much on Friday night.
He single-handedly kept Georgia Southern close.
Yeah.
Then the offense got those three stacked together in the seventh. Noah Ledford hit a ball that I'm convinced tore a hole in a cloud before it went over the monster for the Eagles' first hit of the game. Then two more came in, and you're right there. You're right there against the number 16 team in the country. The next day, you're right there again until the ninth inning. The next day, you're going to extra innings. It takes a grand slam in the 12th to end up sending you to 0-3. Tennessee hit under 200 for the weekend.
Yeah.
They struck out 45 times. In three games, but they had 5 homers. That was the difference. They had 5 home runs.
Go on to game number 2. Again, it was a 5-3 victory for Tennessee over Georgia Southern, but the man that stole the show, it was a battle of a pair of freshmen. We talked about it with Coach Hinton before the game. In a year that seems to have been so dominated, the conversation of who you get back, how much experience is back, had a pair of freshmen going on Saturday for either side. But Chase Dolander came out, and that's a heck of a debut. 5 2/3 innings of work, 3 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts over 85 pitches.
Welcome. Stay a while.
Yeah. And we knew that he was going to be somebody that was going to be special for Georgia Southern. He had been on people's draft boards, even though it was just a 5-round draft coming out of high school. But the fact that for the first 3 innings, there weren't a whole lot of breaking balls. It was just his fastball coming in at 95, 96, and Tennessee couldn't touch it.
Also remember that if he needs them, he has 4 pitches that he can throw for strikes.
Yeah.
That's a freshman that can throw 4 pitches for strikes.
Yeah.
He only needed one of them, which, great, but think about when he shows the full arsenal. How much better is it going to be?
Mm. That's what's called dangerous.
It'll be exciting. He's got to have a great chance against East Carolina this weekend, another top 25 team, which we'll get to. But you can't help but be fired up because of what he just did against maybe the best lineup that the Eagles see this year. I know East Carolina can really swing it. It's going to be close in that respect. But Tennessee had more than enough offensive pedigree from the year before, leading the country in runs, second in homers, fifth in batting average, to shut them down. That makes you think that this is only going to get better by the time you get to conference play.
It was only 1 run in the 3rd inning for Tennessee, but then they scored 4 in the final 2 innings as Gilbert hit a home run in the 9th inning, and we will talk about that a little bit more as we continue on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But going on into Sunday, it was a 7-3 victory for Tennessee. It took 12 innings to do it, as Georgia Southern and Tennessee were pretty well locked at 3-3 from the 3rd inning until the 12th. But Georgia Southern got it going. Noah Ledford, his second home run of the weekend, and good to see old Led, Ken Ledford's boy, back in that lineup.
I love that. Good stuff from Gatalytics on Twitter. Make sure you follow them at Gatalytics if you or so inclined his home run goes, 396 feet over the wall in right center. I have a feeling he'll poke a couple more, a little bit longer than that in 21.
Yeah, 396 is his warm-up.
Yeah, he had a chance to play. He didn't play last year because of the foot injury. He had 11 home runs as a freshman. He's already got two against extremely good competition. And hopefully we have a lot more chances to see him play.
You look at the bullpen for Georgia Southern on Sunday. Ben Johnson makes his Eagle debut, 4-plus innings of 4 strikeouts. No run baseball over 43 pitches. Nick Jones pitches for the second time on the weekend, has 5 strikeouts over 3 innings. Jalen Payton makes his Eagle debut, starts at third base, and then head coach Ronnie Hennen turns into a National League manager. So he brings him on the mound, and then there goes your DH. Tyler Jones comes in, his second appearance of the weekend. Griffin Davis gets back on the bump for Georgia Southern. The bullpen for Georgia Southern, outside of an inning or two, was really, really good this weekend.
I'm going to start with Ben Johnson, because to make your debut, just like with Dolander, you go 4 scoreless out of the pen. Coach Hennen told us that, look, he hasn't had a chance to do a whole lot, but we've seen him in the pen, we've seen him in select scrimmages. He has a chance to be really good. Well, he was in his debut. Nick Jones didn't give up a hit all weekend long in his 2 appearances. Great to see Griffin Davis get back out. Great to see Tyler Jones, and with Jalen Payton, somebody who also had his first 2 career hits over the weekend. He will play both ways. That was not, okay, this staff is so depleted that you've got to go your third baseman to come in and pitch. We've got a big roster this year. There's a lot of options down there. But for Payton, it's an upper 80s, low 90s fastball, hard snap of the breaking ball, and somebody that, hitting-wise, we were both there the day that he took Tyler Owens deep in an on-campus scrimmage.
Yeah.
And to think that that was his first swing, and T.O.'s somebody that's got 1 loss in 2 years at Georgia, thinking, huh, okay.
That'll do.
I'll take it.
One final thing before we wrap up the Tennessee series and move on. The biggest thing for Georgia Southern is I think you learned what kind of team this is. Yes, you had emotions get high, especially on Saturday and pretty much all throughout the weekend, as Tennessee all kinds of fired up in their first base dugout doing their thing. But I think it goes to show you, and it puts in perspective, how lucky Georgia Southern is to have a baseball program like they do here, led by Coach Hennen, and builds the program on playing the game the right way, builds it on class, and you really saw that come to fruition this weekend, because with everything that Tennessee was doing, the bat flips, all of that, whatever you want to call it, it would have been easy to give into that and make it more than it was. But for Georgia Southern, let the field do the talking.
2 parts to what Tennessee was doing, and look, you were there, you and Terry were there for the last 2 days, so I wasn't there physically to be able to witness, and it didn't get that bad on Friday. I mean, you heard some chirping, but there's always going to be a little bit of chirping, especially when it's opening night, and especially when it's been almost a year since you played a live game. Number one, Tennessee hasn't been very good in a long time,
right?
So I think now they know they're good. They're more apt to be a certain way, if that makes sense. And I think you also saw how much winning that series here meant to them. This just wasn't a way to open the season. A year ago, they opened up against Western Illinois. There's not a whole lot to know about Leatherneck baseball.
Right.
That was probably going to be a 3-game sweep out at Lindsey Nelson. And Georgia Southern's going to go there in 2022, which should be a great way to open that campaign. But for Tennessee, they treated this like an important series because I think they realized the kind of program that Coach Hennen has built over the last 2 decades plus. Did it go a little bit overboard? That's to the eye of the beholder. But the fact that they came in and did what they did, it backed up their ranking. On the other side for Georgia Southern, look, we're not used to 0-3 starts. It hasn't happened since 2005. I'm not worried whatsoever.
No.
There's a whole lot of pitching, really good pitching. Tennessee was just able to slug when they needed to slug. And as we know with the Eagle offense, February is not the best month for this offense. It never has been. You might back yourself into a situation where you're playing a New Jersey Tech or a depleted Ball State pitching staff or a Coppin State where it's putting it on a tee. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful. I'm just saying that because it's true. Those are instances, Maryland Eastern Shore. Think about that series early in that season. It's chances where you're going to have an opportunity to score a lot of runs. When you beef up the schedule you're not going to have a whole lot of those opportunities. When you're facing the number 16 team in the country, you need to scratch out wins. You need to earn wins. Georgia Southern was right there all three games. They did not get blown out. They did not get embarrassed. They did not get outclassed.
No, that one I can guarantee you.
You got four this week. Tomorrow we'll be in Charleston, hopefully. Beautiful Patriots Point day trip, going to take on the College of Charleston Cougars. They're off to a 2-1 start. And this weekend, you got another top 25 team coming in East Carolina, and we know that that's one where, after last year up there, that's one these guys have been looking forward to.
It'll be a 4 o'clock first pitch against the CFC Cougars tomorrow afternoon from Patriots Point, like you mentioned. Where are we going to eat in Charleston? This is your domain. When we go to Atlanta, I've got to pick a place to eat.
Yeah.
And whenever we go to Charleston, you've got to pick a place to eat. We've got to indoctrinate Aaron Soka into some Charleston cuisine.
This is where I always get hung up in Charleston, because you're not a big seafood guy, but there are so many good seafood places in Charleston. You're right on the water.
Yeah, I kind of throw a wrench in that chain.
Okay, I hate to ask you what you're going to be in the mood for, because we're 24 hours away from leaving.
Good. What's the place that we go, have gone a couple of times? Blue Dog Diner Cafe thing?
The Blue Dog is in Lafayette, which is very good.
Oh, yeah.
Early Bird Diner.
Yeah, that one. I can never remember the name of it.
We will pass it.
We will. Along with a couple of car dealerships.
Yeah, a lot of car dealerships.
And some triangle place.
Yeah. I haven't been to Charleston in...
a year.
It will be more than that. We wouldn't have gone last year.
Oh, that's true.
Didn't play the Citadel last
year. Oh, we didn't stop at our pie place.
You got the pie place right as you get on 95, Carolina Cider Company. You stop there and get some pie, get some other vittles.
Normally get? Truffles?
They do have truffles. They have their
truffles and cheese grits. That's my go-to.
I think they have their s'more bake.
You always go for the s'more.
Well, it's not really a brownie, but it's a s'more kind of dessert.
Yeah. It's kind of like a s'more, but you forget to cover it with the other graham, as Ham says.
And, and they've got their preserves, their jams, their grits mix, their biscuit mixes. It's a very homey place to visit. I love the fact where it's located. You're driving for about an hour, then you can make the hook off and go get what you need to. I always enjoy the day trips to Charleston. It takes maybe 2.5 hours to get there. The Citadel's not on the schedule. As of right now, it could be, depending on where the schedule goes. But we'll get this matchup with CFC. We played Charleston Southern in the past. The midweeks can be fun, just for the fact that you don't get to really do this with basketball, because it's centered around a weekend. Yeah. Football, you've got that one big event that's on a Saturday most of the time. But with baseball, you get, let's go play a Tuesday afternoon game or Wednesday afternoon game just to break up the monotony of Sun Belt Conference play. We'll go to Mercer. We'll go to Kennesaw. I always go to Cheeseburger Bobby's when we go to Kennesaw. That one's coming up later on this year.
Yes.
It's part of what makes baseball different and what makes it more enjoyable.
You, sir, are in trouble now.
Why is that?
Because apparently you've been holding out on somebody with the s'more deliciousness.
See, as soon as I said s'mores, I knew I was probably in trouble. But getting it as early in the day as we do, and then coming back as late as we do, I don't know if it stays good, so I need to make sure that it has a good home.
True. Valid point.
And there's no saying that the s'more will be available when we go there.
Ooh. Also,
there's been a couple times where it hasn't been put out.
Yes. And that's just a devastating defeat.
They do these little mini pies, too.
Oh.
In the little tins.
Little babies.
Little baby apple pies, too.
Well, she said that was excuses. But they're good ones.
I mean, if you want excuses described as facts, I have plenty of those.
Okay. We ain't getting into all that. But Georgia Southern will take on East Carolina at J.I. Clements this weekend, Friday at 6:30, Saturday at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock on Sunday. And you talked about it a little bit after being swept by ECU up in Greenville last year, and the way that trip just didn't go the way.
We
got
weren't
stranded on the side of the road.
We weren't there, but we heard more than enough stories. It just did not go.
But knowing that it was going to be the back end of a home-and-home, you expected this one to be circled, and I know this team is looking forward to the Pirates coming in this weekend.
East Carolina just swept Rhode Island over the weekend, one of those series where they did what they were supposed to do. That's how they were beginning their campaign. They did have to walk off 1-0 in game one, but they handled the Rams in games two and three. They played Duke this week, and Duke's a top 15 team, so they'll have a nice little test before they make their way to Statesboro. Got almost everybody back from last year. Jake Kuchmaner is one of the top arms in the American. They've got a couple of hitters, Connor Norby and Bryson Worrell, who just dominated Georgia Southern pitching last year. Ryder Giles is an outstanding baseball name. He'll be in there at shortstop. The one guy that isn't, that probably is good that he isn't because his career is over, Alec Burleson, the two-way guy who is an All-American. He shut out the Eagles in the opening game of that series and also hit an RBI double. So take him out of the lineup, and that's a good thing, but they've got more than enough guys that can step in and do their job. Seth Cadell is a three-year starter behind the plate. That's a good team. That's a good program.
Yeah.
They do things their way, and they've been really good at it.
Friday and Saturday, because of basketball, at least at this point in the week, as we sit here at 9:20 a.m. on Tuesday morning, Friday and Saturday will be internet only. Terry Harvin will have the call on that, and he will have a cast of characters with him.
Oh, no.
Then on Sunday, Danny and I will be back from our basketball excursions. And
Wait, cast, you're going to have to cast of characters? Was he going to set up little troll dolls in the booth, or what's he going to do?
I don't know.
It's only on the internet, but oh, geez.
No.
As of right now, it's only on the internet.
Yeah, he's got it. He'll be fine.
One button and pull. One button and go.
Yes, sir. With his beautiful microphone that he copied me on. I'm still not going to let him live it down that he copied me on the microphone.
How do you mean he copied you on the microphone?
He has his own microphone like mine. Not this one, but...
Oh, you mean the little baby one?
No, my old school one. But yeah, his is the little baby one.
Because that's the one he uses to do some of his...
Oh, you're thinking of a different one. He has one like mine.
Okay, I haven't seen this.
Yeah, the old school microphone. He's got one.
Does he wear the hat that says press on it?
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
Nor do I.
Okay. Just don't wear a shirt and tie either. It's not built for it.
No.
We're not built for that.
No shot. No. Georgia Southern basketball will be home against Appalachian State for the men's side, up in Boone for women's side. Georgia Southern baseball at CFC on Wednesday, and then this weekend against East Carolina at J.I. Clemens. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, until next week, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.